Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, good. What is it? I don't even, I forget what it does when I use this thing. Do you get a little message saying this is being recorded or something?
Sounds like a very polite British woman telling me that.
This call is being recorded by recorder for iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like one of the like B-roll Spice Girls. So, one of those.
Slappy Spice.
Yeah, it's like Slappy Spice or Lazy Spice. I don't know.
What does Slappy Spice even mean? Okay, I'm just gonna. We'll just start talking about this, and then I'm gonna post it later. I should even include this part.
Everybody loves Spice Girls, man. Come on now.
Yeah.
They had a moment, like multiple.
That's right. All right. So here's what I want to do.
Slam your body down and wind it all around? Is that it?
No, I want to take the next half hour, and I want you to assuage my fears of the offensive line.
Okay.
Like, you make me feel better about everything. And that it's a tough position to play when you're young and you can get better every game and things are going to improve. And Doug Kramer is just a bruise or something. And he'll be back next week.
So what you're saying is this is a, Robert, calm down session masquerading.
This is a therapy session. Yes.
As a podcast.
Yes, without question. In fact,
That sounds great. I'm going to run with that. So I'm very comfortable.
Okay.
This is good.
Okay. So let's start with will the entire season be Chase Crouch running for his life?
No.
Okay.
No, it won't be. Thanks,
Doc.
You know, if you look at it and say, I think people always underrate how big a role continuity plays in offensive line play. And it was an offensive line that was jumbled all throughout training camp. And then you go out there, and for the first quarter, it's probably a combination that they've never used before, maybe other than this week of practice, if that even, you know, with Zeke Barton at guard and Adam Solomon at tackle. And then, you know, you have the second quarter going, and you bring Boyd in at guard and DeLauro back in at tackle. And, you know, the offense seems to find its footing. And then, you know, and then Doug Kramer gets hurt, unfortunately. And hopefully he's okay. But then you gotta just mix it up again. And so, you're in the beginning of the second quarter, and you're on your third offensive line combination of the game.
I think I felt the best before Kramer got hurt. Like the first drive of the second quarter when DeLauro Boyd came back in, those 5-6 plays or whatever it was, it was immediately better because that was the line for most of camp. Most of the 5 weeks was those five guys. They'd switched them around.
Right.
Boyd had his concussion issue. Right. But that was it. So, okay, then why? Why is continuity such a big deal?
Because a lot of it is feel, and a lot of it is, you know, when things are happening during the game, you don't always have time to spell out pre-snap or during the play and say exactly what's happening. I mean, a lot of it just becomes feel, you know. I mean, in the ideal world, you know, your guards have a relationship and a communication style with their tackle, and then they have a communication style with the center, you know, the guys on either side of them. And so you have that on both sides, but when you're switching guys around and you're saying, okay, well, you know, not only are we going to switch, you know, our guards, some of the guards are going to play, you know, Adam Solomon started the game at tackle, and then he played most of the game at guard, you know, and you're just moving guys around, and so it's a big deal, you know, and then you also throw into the fact that, again, this is just, you throw in the fact that okay, we're going to throw a true freshman out there. And I thought Boyd actually played pretty well. You know, I mean, I would have been a worthless pile of garbage as a true freshman playing, but I thought Boyd actually played pretty well. You know, the guy goes out there, you know, didn't look like he was blown any assignments. You know, he got his hands on guys, and he had them locked up, and clearly he's strong enough and physical enough to play at this level. So I think that's encouraging, but it's just, you know, it's a offensive line is a lot more nuanced than would immediately meet the eye. And I think when you start messing with some of that stuff, there's definitely a period of adjustment.
So then let's go back to 06-07 then, because this is kind of an 06-07 scenario, right? Like in 06, you guys had a young team. Most people were coming back for 07. Let's see, 06 was Millington next to you and then McDonald at center?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then Kim played left tackle in 06.
Yeah, and then in 07, X was at left. Millington
and Kim
went
over
right.
Correct.
Who was at right guard in 06?
Matt Maddox.
That's right. Okay.
Maddox was at,
okay.
Well, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But McDonald was at center in 06?
Correct. And Maddox had played center prior to that. But, yeah, in 06, it was McDonald at center and Maddox at right guard.
So you and McDonald were next to each other for those full 2 years, 06 and 07. And you basically just got a new tackle next to you.
Right.
So walk me through, like, the rough games from, like, Ohio U and all that right through Rose Bowl, right? Like, that line consistently got better over those 2 years. And, you know, I think it was, like, for me as a fan, it was probably the – what was the – was it the – it was probably the Syracuse game. Now, Syracuse wasn't very good, but Syracuse game in 07 when it was like, holy crap, this line is going to blow some people up, and like Richard is going to get 1,500 yards this year. Like, that was the first, like, holy crap, like, when was the last time we had a line this dominating? So how does it go from some of the Ohio U struggles all the way up to, you know, like, what would it be, 9 games later, totally dominating?
Can we just lay as a ground rule never to talk about Ohio? Let's just move on from that.
Frank Lemke would disagree, but go ahead.
Putting that aside. No, I mean, like I said, I think a lot of it, you know, I think the big part of it is obviously, you know, youth leads to mistakes and inexperience leads to mistakes. And so, you know, eventually you get to a point where, you know, everybody in, whether it be in life, in your career, or in football, I mean, I think football is very much just a microcosm for all the stuff that comes later, but, you know, there's a period where you really have to take your lumps. And so guys, you know, depending on where guys are in their careers, you know, they're taking lumps at different times. And so from my perspective, you know, in 2006, you know, Ryan was kind of taking some lumps. I think that was one of his first years as a full-time starter. He played some tackle prior to that. You know, Kim had transferred from Oklahoma, and so he was, getting settled in. You know, I was in my third year starting, but still not great at football. But I think what you have then is you have, you know, people who, you know, I had a great relationship with, you know, with Ryan, and so he and I were usually on the same page with stuff in 06, and then the other side of him was, you know, Maddox, and Maddox had played center the year prior. So, you know, two experienced guys on either side of Ryan to kind of at least help from the mental perspective as much as we could, you know, help him make the adjustment. And the guy's, basically a rocket scientist, so that helps. I think a lot of it comes down to, you have to have a mixture of, in my opinion, a good offensive line has a good mixture of experience, talent, intelligence. And then just kind of, I mean, you just want to get after people, you know? I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to. And, you know, in 07, you know, there's some good talent there. You know, Ryan was with San Diego for a little while. X got drafted by the, in I think the fifth round. You know, John Asamoah at right guard, you know, got drafted by the Chiefs in the third round, had a, you know, great NFL career. You know, Akim was a guy who took a lot of pride in, you know, going up against, you know, good pass rushers on the outside, and Akim always seemed to play his best in big moments. And so, you know, and that just kind of comes down to continuity and just kind of getting beat up for long enough to figure it out. And, you know, ultimately the only reason we had success as an offensive line in 2007, one, was everybody stayed healthy. You know, two, we had great coaching, Eric Wolford. And three, you're surrounded by, you know, great skill position players that can make you look good in the frequent times when you don't excel. And so I think part of it too, and, you know, one thing that I would imagine we're going to see a lot of, and I'll bring it back around here, you know, with this team and this year is, you know, you're going to see moving forward, you know, you're going to see situations where, you know, Derek McGee in the offense, they're putting the offensive line in situations, they're not putting them in situations where you're going to have a lot of tackles singled up on five-step drops and, you know, play action and longer developing stuff, but, you know, you're going to give them a chance to come off the ball and run the ball, you know, do some quick passing game, you know, some screen game. You know, Mike Epstein is clearly an asset there, and you have, you know, Mike Kubiak, and you have Malik Turner, and you have these options of guys, not to mention Kedrick Foster and Reggie Corbin when he comes back. You know, so I would expect to see moving forward, you know, and having been a part of offensive lines that struggled with blocking, you know, it's quick game. It's you let them cut. You know, you kind of let them get aggressive. You use the defensive line's aggressiveness against them. And, again, this is all part of this offense still trying to figure out what its identity really is because there are so many new parts and key positions.
So, I mean, given the experience playing next year, so I was thinking this today, like, I'm trying to come up with, if Kramer's out, what's the best line?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to get Paltrow out there. I know, I think he's been dinged up a little bit, and so, and throwing another true freshman into the mix is probably crazy. But, you know, say they got him out there, then the question is, do you put... So, like, I came over the line. I was like, okay, what if you went DeLauro left tackle, quick tackle? You Megginson into left guard. Allegretti at center. You bring Paltrow right guard, and then Boyd right tackle. And then I'm thinking, that's insane. True freshman right guard, true freshman right tackle, insanity.
Yeah.
So maybe switch it up and pair, you know, Megginson with Boyd and pair DeLauro with Paltrow or whatever, you know, like, you know. Put an experienced guy next to an inexperienced guy.
Right.
But is it better than, you know, say Kramer's okay and he comes back in the next few games, do you want to put Allegretti and DeLauro next to each other because they know each other so well and, you know, play together so much? Or would you want an experienced guy with an inexperienced guy on each side?
Yeah, I think of the, I mean, and again, this is kind of contradictory to what I was talking about with continuity, but I think you also have to, account for the, I mean, right, you want to cut that inexperience with some experience. So you want to have a guy who, you know, knows the offense better, who's a lot more experienced next to a guy who maybe doesn't. So that way you don't have, just help from, you know, whether it be identifying blitzes or making sure they're on the same page with respect to, you know, run blocking calls or what have you. I think, you know, you wouldn't want to have, you know, two really inexperienced guys on the same side of the line, especially if those guys are true freshmen, just because it's hard enough to play at this level as a true freshman, which, again, it still blows me away that guys can do it and be successful. But I think that's probably a more ideal scenario is, you know, in your scenario, basically saying, hey, you know, put, you know, you basically put a freshman next to an experienced guy. And so that way they have somebody to ask questions to. And so that way you don't theoretically have an entire side of the line kind of flatlining with respect to, you know, reading stuff pre-snap and stuff like that. Just so you can at least, you can, the physical thing is one thing, but if you have an experienced guy next to an inexperienced guy, you can at least make sure that they're on the same page with respect to the mental part of the game. And so that just kind of takes, you know, a potential issue off the table.
Yeah.
But I think we're
okay,
going to see a lot of experimenting. I think we're going to see some shuffling. I think we're going to see some different lineups. And
that's not the best, right? Like
no, it's not. You know,
by shuffling, you're
you know what else is not
putting
the
off
best?
The
it's not having enough offensive linemen on the roster. I mean, that's the problem. Is you know that the previous coaching staffs you know leaving 13 offensive linemen on your roster is just it's crazy.
Yep.
It's crazy. You know, we were at one of the camp practices, and there's camps where you get a couple guys banged up, and all of a sudden you don't have enough guys for two offensive lines. Like, that's really hard. That's a difficult situation.
And so much of that sources to the 14 recruiting class and the little panic moment there. We don't have linemen, and so they went and grabbed three JUCO linemen. Well, what happens with JUCO linemen when they're gone? It's a 2-year patch over the hole, but then when they're gone, the hole's there again. So, but we've been over that. We know that. So, moving away from offensive line for a second, I watched the game again. I didn't hate it as much as I did live. Like,
right?
Maybe this is just a fan in me, but some of those third down conversions, not that they were fluky, but it was like Ball State was gonna have like 20 good plays, and they had their good plays at like the most opportune times. Like, I don't know if it was so much clutch or if it was like they, the same plays that were failing on second down somehow were working on third down kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had this feeling of like, I feel like they started the game 10 for 14 on third down. So by the end of the third quarter, it seems like they're converting everything. And I just had this feeling of like, oh, my gosh, we can't start this. This is our Achilles heel again. But watching it a second time, it was almost like, you play that game again and you mix up the plays and maybe they don't convert some of those or maybe, whatever. So I don't know. I guess I felt a little better watching it the second time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you like the fact that kind of throughout the game, the defense was putting Ball State in those adverse situations, in third and long, and getting them there. But then obviously you got to close it down. And I think the piece to me that was fun to watch, and the piece that I think is going to be enjoyable moving forward, is when you're playing this many young players, you really can see guys, light bulbs kind of click on in the span of a game, And so watching, the team, the team that was out there in the first quarter was not the team that was out there in the fourth quarter, because, on the third downs and when we needed stops in the fourth quarter, the defense stood up. I mean, you got guys out there like Isaiah Gay coming off the edge like a demon, making plays and forcing holding calls. And you got Bobby Roundtree, who's, really impressed me just kind of with the savviness of his play, with a couple of tip passes and getting a good pass rush. And it's just I'm interested and excited to see the young guys' growth from week one to week two, because it's kind of the old coaching axiom of, the most growth happens between week one and week two. And I think that's even more so true for, teams where you got guys who haven't really played much. And not even just the freshmen, guys like, Sean Adesanya hadn't played much. Timer Oliver hadn't started before. You have a lot of these other guys on the team that just haven't played very much. And so they're out there and they're figuring out and, there's a lot of growth that happens, and they're going to have to grow quick because, Western Kentucky is a really good football team coming in. But they're just throwing a lot of guys out there, as we saw, a couple games into last season. They were just like, all right, let's see who can play. And, I think it's clear what you saw in camp, some of these freshman guys, there's some ball players.
Yeah, it's funny, like with Crawford and Dunlap out, and with Foster, whatever, maybe struck a little bit, and they went with Epstein or whatever. Pretty much, and then DeLauro doesn't start doesn't play the first quarter. It was basically like one senior, Malik Turner, contributing on the entire team. How many times does a college football team take the field? There's basically one senior contributing. Like it's insane. I still can't get over it.
It's not ideal.
Yes, it is not ideal.
But yeah, no, I mean that's right. And I think that's the thing too, is you look at it and you say, okay, you know, you get Jalen Dunlap healthy and out there, you know, hopefully at some point soon, and then you feel good, you know, knowing his ability. And I think, you know, I think not having Crawford out there, you know, because he's still somewhat of an unknown commodity at defensive end, but, you know, the one thing the guy can do is certainly pass rush and get after the quarterback. And that was something that was missing, you know, through three quarters on Saturday, was the inability to get pressure with four. And, you know, then they kind of started picking it up a little bit. Jamal Milan had a couple nice rushes on the inside. You know, Roundtree had a couple nice rushes. You know, Isaiah Gay comes screaming off the edge. But yeah, it's just going to be, you know, who's it going to be this time? It's really, you know, there's so many new faces that are out there and that are going to be contributing. You just don't know where it's going to come from.
Yeah, I feel, I don't know, through the first three quarters, I saw the game I was expecting. I mean, I predicted a loss. So, like, you know, I was watching exactly what I expected. The stuff we saw in the scrimmages and the youth and everything else and the first game, when you're that young, I don't care the opponent, like, sometimes you're just going to look like nobody knows what they're doing at all, which is the third quarter, you know. But to pull out the win, scratch and claw as it was, you know, like, you need Mikey Dudek to run up on a punt and split two defenders and go to, you know, pull out this victory, but victory they pulled out. I don't know, it kind of reminds me, like, I kind of had a 2013 feeling. Like, 13, who they open with? Was that SIU again? Yeah, 13 was SIU. They had the big lead, and then suddenly SIU's, like, inside the 10, down 8, trying to tie the game with 40 seconds left. And then they came out the next week, and, like, totally different game. Like, much improved in every phase, beat Cincinnati pretty handily, you know, and then, you know, hung around with Washington the following week. So I could see that happening again. Like, yes, we could. This could be 2003, right? You were a redshirt freshman, right?
Yeah.
You were redshirt.
I was redshirting, yeah.
Yeah, it could be 03, and this was the Illinois State game, and you're looking up and like, holy crap.
Well, here's the thing. You know, you mentioned those two games, you know, Illinois State and Southern Illinois, and not to take anything away from them, but those are FCS opponents to open the year. You know, this is a MAC team. You know, it's always difficult, you know, no matter when you're playing them, you know, Mid-American Conference teams are always difficult to play against, just because any time that they're playing against a Big Ten team, and it's usually at, you know, usually at home or whatever, you know, at the Big Ten team's home, I mean, there's always that, you know, colossal chip on their shoulder any time they're playing. So every MAC team that I played against, it was always a dogfight. You know, and we lost some of those games, you know, see Ohio, and we won some of those games, but they weren't pretty, you know, like Western Michigan in 04, even Ball State in 07. You know, it's always a difficult matchup. So, again, to me, that's part of it, too, is, you know, usually you're opening up with, you know, an FCS team, and you're able to kind of hopefully work out some of those kinks, and you have the talent disparity that's a lot larger than what it would be for a Mid-American Conference team. In Ball State, you know, they didn't have a great record last year, but, you know, heck, if you looked at them, I mean, there were a ton of, like, one-possession games. You know, and they had some good players. James Gilbert was a really good running back. You know, I'm glad that our defense got to go against a running back of that caliber, because we're going to see that all season. You know, you're just going to see good running backs up and down Big Ten West. You know, Akram Wadley, you know, all these guys. You know, the two guys up in Minnesota, Ronnie Davis and Shannon Brooks. I mean, you're going to see these guys out there. So I think that was a positive. And again, but it came down to making plays, right? And, you know, we had the playmakers that stepped up and made the plays. You know, Trey Watson gets two turnovers. You know, Mike Dudek has a couple huge plays. And, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of having that dude that can make the play. And, you know, we had those dudes on Saturday, and they'll be there next Saturday.
Yeah, I think, like, maybe the most encouraging thing for me was, Ball State. So remember, Purdue 2014, and they had those, like, I think, what did they have, 8 plays over 40 yards? Like,
yeah,
it was a fairly even game, but they blew it open because of just a few missed assignments. Like,
right.
You know, Illinois was playing pretty well, and then, oh, crap, 67-yard touchdown. Where'd that come from? You know, and then all the stopping, three and out. Okay, oh, 55-yard touchdown run. You know, I guess, you know, this wasn't Purdue, obviously. You know, we're a step down to a MAC team and a bad young MAC team. But I guess I'm trying to think. There was the one missed tackle by Nate Hobbs that led to the long run down the east sideline. That was 20-some yards.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of missed tackles.
I can't really think of any real huge busts. And that's what my biggest concern going into the game was. Like, we're going to see a bunch of just like, hey, I thought we were in this, and you called this, and coach held up that sign, and we both took the same guy and left somebody streaking wide open all around, you know, whatever. So I guess that was encouraging to me that even with all this youth, and no seniors playing a single snap on the defense and everything else, you know, that there weren't those crazy missed assignments that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, no, I mean, because you had times out there where you're working with two true freshman corners and a true freshman free safety in Bennett Williams. And, you know, I think what we saw was, you know, something that is kind of, you know, cut and dry Lovie Smith defense, right? Keep it in front of you. You know, make them earn it. Make them continue to chunk their way down the field and execute long drives. And, you know, hopefully you can make a play in there or that they'll screw up, which, you know, is usually a good bet with almost any college offense because it's difficult to sustain, you know, long drives. But, yeah, I mean, you didn't see a lot of guys running free in the secondary. You know, when there were guys that were open, you know, they were open underneath. And, you know, in rewatching the game yesterday, something that stood out to me just in general about the defense was, I mean, there was a lot of gang tackling going on. I mean, even when, you know, there was a period in the third quarter where the defense was just dog-tired and Ball State was using tempo. But, you know, by and large, you look throughout the entire game and, I mean, you just have guys just hustling their butts off. I mean, you have defensive linemen, you know, out there making plays downfield, which is not easy. And so that was encouraging to me was I saw a team out there in a particular defense that was, I mean, they were going after it, and they were playing really hard. And that's the thing, you know, if you're young and you know, even if you don't know what to do, it's like, hey, if you're going to make a mistake, you're going to do something, just do it full speed, and, you know, you figure it out in the film room the next day.
I feel strangely confident for Saturday. I don't know if we're going to win, but what are we, 8-point dog or something like that? But I feel strangely much better than I did. Okay, I predicted a loss and thought I would come away from that loss feeling pretty awful. And we almost lost. Well, we did win, and I feel a little better about it, you know. We got to fix the time of possession. It has to be fixed.
Yeah.
You're not going to win many football games when you have the ball for 23 minutes. Nobody is. Like, you know, when plays are, what, 80-something to 50-something,
right,
you're going to lose, okay? You know, so you have to fix that side of it. You don't have the depth in the defense to hang around where he's out there, you know, whatever. But, I feel a little better just I don't know. No huge mistakes on the D. Third down, you got to fix. No huge, you know, the offensive line struggles, which we already talked about, but, you know, you saw from Turner and Dudek if you can get him the ball. And you saw from Epstein. And all this, you know, you saw this stuff that, you know, oh, that could be a thing later this year. You know, so, I don't know. I guess I feel a little better than I thought I would after a 3-point victory with a blocked field goal over a young bad neck team.
Yeah, I mean, I went into the game with the expectation that it would be very similar to, and we talked about this, that, you know, it would be very similar to, you know, Minnesota Buffalo on Thursday night. You know, that was a similar situation in the sense that, you know, Buffalo really struggled last year. There was a MAC team playing on the road, and, you know, Minnesota wins 17-7. So, you know, I was expecting something like that. And, I mean, first games are always tough. I mean, just look all around the country. You know, I mean, you know, heck, what was it? Howard that won at UNLV. You know, Liberty wins at Baylor. I mean, the first week is a weird week. And so the fact that you're able to survive and just get the win and come out of it and learn lessons on that side of the ledger, you know, that's that's a big thing. And so I think the offense is definitely going to have to play better. I certainly expect them to have a better game. Chase Crouch, had kind of a rough game. He wasn't able to get his running game going until kind of the end there, that last drive that went into the touchdown. He had a couple of really nice runs there that got him going. But even in spite of some of the struggles there, he threw some really nice balls. There are a couple passes there that were pretty good, and either it was tight coverage or guys weren't able to make the plays. I mean, I think you can see the team as a whole, and in this case, just looking at the offense, you can see these pieces, and they're kind of laying there and saying, oh well, there's the opportunity for this offense to be, I think, pretty good. But again, it's just it's going to take time to gel and to coalesce. And you also go in and, we've been thinking Chase is going to be the starter here, all off season. And I think, at least in my mind, sometimes overlook the fact that, the guy hasn't started very much at all. He's still very much learning. Every game for him is a huge chunk of his overall experience as a college football player. And so you look for, I'm really looking for big improvement from him from week one to week two, just because, it's another game in the offense. And, he was able to make some mistakes. I thought he did a good job of taking care of the ball. There's the one pass that went off Malik's helmet, so not exactly sure what happened there. But thought they did a pretty good job of taking care of the football. And, there's even the upperclassmen on this team haven't had a lot of experience. And so it's just going to be, they're going to be growing and learning from week to week, and that's where you lean on the coaching. And again, I've said this to you, but I feel, supremely confident in the ability of the coaching staff that's at Illinois right now to develop guys and get them ready to play. And, there's a lot of evidence to point to that over the past, 18 months.
Yeah. And it was great to see a comeback. Well, the staff, we went, 5.5 seasons without a single, if we trailed at any point in the game, what was it, 08-12 or something like that? If we trailed at any point in the game, we would lose. Not a single comeback victory for 5+ seasons. So, it's nice to see that final drive, see a scorebook where you're outgained by 150 and time of possession is totally, not in your favor, yet you made two big turnovers on defense and you made a big punt return, and that flipped the entire game. Flipped what should have been a 10-15 point loss into a 3-point win. So I like, I like winning that game.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I want to keep you all night. So I appreciate you recording this. And, I'll see you Saturday.
That sounds good.
All right, dude. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. See you.
All right, see you.
Bye.